Don't forget, you can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Now, sometimes when we think of the impact climate change is having on wildlife, we imagine distant and remote animals like snow leopards or polar bears. We think less about the effect global warming is having on the wildlife in our back garden. New research is making us think again, however. It shows that several species which are widespread across Ireland may not adapt fast enough to keep pace with climate change. The international team looked mostly at birds and found that many common species, including the magpie and great tit, could become extinct due to projected rapid warming. Dr. Thomas Reid is co-author of the study and senior lecturer in zoology at University College Cork. Thomas, tell us about this study and who was involved.
Sure, Derek. So this was a study that involved an international team of collaborators. So there were actually 64 of us from across Europe, Ireland and the UK. So I was the sole Irish person on the team. And basically what we did was we pulled together information from lots of different what we call long-term population studies. Mm-hmm. Of animals, and in the end the data set, when we whittled it down, was predominantly birds, about 95% birds, because birds tend to be particularly well studied in this regard. So basically we pulled together this information from all these different long-term studies on how birds and a few other animals have been responding to climate change in recent decades, and then secondly we sort of projected forward into the future to ask, given what we've observed in the past, what might be the likely outcomes for these populations in the future? So, in a nutshell, what we found was when we looked at to the past, we sort of looked at two key types of processes or traits that are involved in responding to climate change. So one of these is the timing of key biological events, so what we called phenology. And a major finding prior to our study, you know, lots of studies have found that basically, climate change is kind of advancing the timing of biological spring, especially in temperate parts of the world. So places like Ireland, Northern Europe, the leaves are coming on the trees earlier in spring and the insects are active and hatching out earlier and earlier. And so a lot of the animals are then are trying to sort of keep pace with those changes, those timing changes in their environment. And our first major result basically is we found, indeed, across these scores of species involved, we found that they are shifting their timing to get earlier. So they're laying their eggs earlier in the year, or they're migrating earlier in the year. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing in that they're tracking these changes in their environment, the changes in sort of the timing of biological spring. However, the second thing that we looked at was, well, we asked, how does this translate into their reproductive success? So in a nutshell, what we found was that indeed, not only does the early bird catch the worm, but they also fledge more chicks on average. So we find that earlier breeding birds or earlier migrating birds tend to sort of do better, tend to have higher reproductive success. So that's the kind of good news, in that they're sort of adaptively tracking changes in their environment. But then I suppose the more pessimistic outlook of the study was, they don't seem to be tracking these changes perfectly. So the reason why we could say that the evidence there that they're not tracking this perfectly is that we can quantify what we actually call the strength of natural selection for these phenology traits. And without sort of going into the technical details, what we found was that the bird populations we looked at on average don't seem to be breeding quite early enough to be keeping track with these changes in their environments. And we can see signatures of that in their reproductive success. So this is a kind of a Darwinian natural selection process in action in the wild.
Thomas, you must be unique in this group because we are an island. Now, that has implications for things which want to change their way of life because of climate change. If you take the amphibians, the reptiles and the mammals, they can't go anywhere. They have to put up with what comes. But the birds are different. They can vote with their feet. And if they don't like it here, they can move to Scotland or to England or to the continent or wherever. So we are an unusual case. In mainland Europe, they they can do all kinds of strange things. Now, if you look at the balance sheet, what's come and what has gone, the first sign of climate change here, a really big change, was 1969 when the white throat disappeared. Climate change had altered.
Now, you better explain what the white throat is, Richard.
Well, the white throat is a little warbler, a lovely little warbler that comes from Africa. It has to fly across the Sahara and the Sahel. Now, due to climate change, the Sahel was drying up. So the poor old little white throat had further to go and further to go, and it suffered as a result. So there was a huge crash in the white throat population. But since then, all kinds of interesting things have happened. You've had three species of egret moving north. The great white and the cattle are breeding in England, and the little egret is breeding here. You have Hooper swans coming down and breeding here from Iceland. You have the great skua breeding here. All kinds of change seems to depend on climate change. Redneck phalaropes have gone, on the other hand. So there's a kind of swings and roundabouts kind of effect, Tom.
Absolutely, Richard. So one of the sort of big, I suppose, pictures to emerge from all of this is that climate change is kind of shaking up the status quo. So as you described there, we sort of have the numbers of different species wax and wane as the climate changes. And for a small little island like Ireland, you know, we can lose some species as the climate changes, but we can also gain others. So you mentioned a few cases there of the loss there of the white throat, but the gain of others. There's some very interesting work as well looking at our wintering water bird populations. So ducks, geese, swans, etc. You mentioned the whooper swan, Richard. There's another species, the Bewick swan. And their numbers have declined precipitously in Ireland since the sort of 1990s.
You make it sound as if that's a problem. It isn't. It's because the hooper doesn't have to come here anymore. He's doing so well elsewhere.
The Bewicks, yes. So that's it. So they breed up in Northern Europe, Arctic Russia. And as you say, they just might not have to come as far afield as Ireland anymore during the winter months to avoid sort of inclement conditions further north. So that's true. So in a way that could be deemed a good thing, but I suppose they're also getting hammered at the breeding grounds. And so climate change is hitting the Bewick swans over the breeding grounds as well. You can look at a local level like Ireland and you can see how sort of the numbers of different species are waxing and waning and things are arriving and things are leaving. But we kind of need to think of the bigger global picture for some of these species that have broad ranges and are indeed migratory, so like the swans we talked about. And they're being hit by climate change both in their wintering areas, but also in their breeding grounds and in the stopover sites in between. And so, you know, some species are profiting from the warmer conditions, but others are certainly suffering.
These birds are migratory. They come here expecting certain conditions and the climate has changed and they don't arrive in time. I understand how that might be in effect. But you mentioned that the birds that are breeding here, things like magpies and great tits, that they're also in trouble and not changing, not starting early enough. But what is the problem? I mean, if the weather gets warmer and the magpie just sort of doesn't breed till next week, is he going to run out of food at the other end? I mean, you know, if you're rearing your chicks in May and June, surely there's still some food for them there. It's not as if they're breeding in September and October and the winter catches up on them or anything like that. So why would the fact that they don't start with the gun at the beginning of March or the beginning of April when spring is coming earlier, why does that affect their breeding status? Surely there's enough food in this season for them anyway.
Yeah, so you make a couple of good points there. And I guess just to say, first of all, that this big study I've talked about, none of the data actually came from Ireland. So, you know, I can't really talk about magpie populations in Ireland in that respect. But, you know, the magpie was one of the population studies. I think it came from Europe, mainland Europe. So in general, what we can say is that for a lot of these species, they can change when they breed or when they migrate. But, you know, the whole ecosystem is sort of changing in parallel, but not necessarily perfectly so. So what you can get is these asynchronies and mismatches emerge where there's, say, the magpie might be breeding a week or two earlier now than it used to, but the food that it relies upon maybe to feed its chicks might be sort of peaking even earlier in the season. And so they might be missing that peak. Now, we don't actually have good data on this for magpies. So if I could just shift to talk about great tits, which is a species that we have loads of good information on. There's some very good evidence that the great tits, which is a common bird here in Ireland, across Europe, a garden bird, woodland bird, they rely on caterpillars to feed their chicks, largely on caterpillars. And caterpillars are very sensitive in their development to temperature. So as the temperatures have increased, the sort of annual peak in all of this caterpillar abundance has essentially shifted to earlier in the year by a couple of weeks. And the birds have in turn have responded by breeding earlier, but not early enough. So you get this timing mismatch between the birds and the food that they're feeding their chicks. And like you say, there might still be enough food for some of them later in the season, but it's not enough potentially. And then they start to feel the impacts of that in terms of essentially the number of chicks that they can successfully raise, or in the subsequent survival of those chicks.
Yeah,
so that's one of the key mechanisms here, is what we call phenological mismatch, that could, you know, lie at the heart of some of these problems.
Caterpillars change and burst their coats and get hairier and hairier and hairier. So the great tits want them when they're baldy little tiny green ones. They don't want big hairy God's horses, which were not good for. So if the caterpillars have moved on and the chicks aren't there in time, they're getting fed to big hairy caterpillars, and that ain't good
for them.
Yeah, so that's really what's happening there. But things like magpies, you would imagine, are much more Catholic in their tastes and can eat lots of stuff. But then, as you say, it's not the Irish diet for those. So it's they're not speeding up quickly enough.
Yeah, species like magpies are, you know, much more generalist in their habits, and they can eat a range of different items. So we're not sure what's going on exactly with the magpies, but there is some interesting work in the UK actually showing that generalist species, so species that tend to be able to live in a range of different habitats or eat a range of different things, they seem to be doing much better with climate change than more specialised species. So, for example, the UK, and this has happened in Ireland as well, you know, they've numbers of specialist species like corn buntings or grey partridges that really rely on grassland, cereal type landscapes. Those species have declined drastically in the UK, and indeed we've lost our breeding corn buntings here in Ireland. Whereas more generalist species like great spotted woodpecker have greatly increased in numbers and expanded their ranges, and even, you know, are now pushed into eastern parts of Ireland. So a key kind of finding there is that climate change is sort of homogenizing the bird communities, where things are kind of becoming more similar. You're losing a lot of the specialists and you're gaining more of the generalists.
Thomas, it seems to me that you have a hell of a problem on your hand, because it's never a single reason for death or decline. It's always multifactorial. You mentioned things like the corn bunting. Well, the corn bunting thrived in the old days when Ireland was a cereal-producing country, but it moved more to pasture, and then, of course, things like partridge and corn bunting declined. Not so much because of the climate, but because of the habitat. The habitat is gone, new pressures. So, and this is happening right across the board. You're going to have all kinds of changes going on. So it's going to be very difficult to pin a change on any one bird. I think the magpie is particularly interesting, because the magpie doesn't migrate. Our Irish magpies, we used to think they came at Cromwell, but they didn't. They came in 1672, and they never go anywhere. So they're like the mammals. They're stuck on this island. So it would be very interesting to see how the Irish magpie fares, whereas in Europe, they will be connected with the magpies all the way across and up and down the continent. So it'd be harder to track what's going on.
I wonder, would anybody care if the magpie was on the decline? Anyway, go on, Thomas, yeah?
I for one, would.
Would you, really?
No, you're absolutely right, Richard, and I didn't mean to imply that corn buntings have declined necessarily because of climate change. I was using it rather as an example of a sort of a highly specialised species in the grander scheme of things. But, I mean, this is a key point, that attributing the loss or decline of a given species to one thing or the other, it's very difficult, because we can't do natural experiments. Everything's happening simultaneously. Indeed, probably habitat changes and loss are more the driver for species like corn buntings or grey partridges. But my point was more just that the general pattern is that with things like climate change, specialised species, they sort of have less tricks up their sleeve, if you like. They're less adaptable, whereas generalist species who can live in a range of different habitats or eat a range of different foods, they're more buffered against environmental change as a whole. And so it's sort of hard to make hard and fast conclusions here, but that's one conclusion that's emerging in the literature, is that generalists might profit while specialists suffer. If I could just actually give another interesting example that is more related to climate change there. A study in Finland recently has shown that we have wader species like the lapwing and the curlew, mm-hmm. and they build their nests traditionally in those parts of Finland on barley fields. And basically they would nest after the farmers had sown their crops in the spring. But as temperatures have increased, the birds are now laying their eggs earlier, so they're nesting earlier, but before the farmers have got to the fields. And so then the farmers are coming in unwittingly because they can't see them, and they're destroying the nests with their tractors and machinery. So basically, the researchers found that farmers in Finland, they are sowing their fields a week earlier now than they used to because of climate change. So over four decades, the farmers are sowing their barley sort of about a week earlier. But these birds, the lapwings and the curlews, are actually laying their eggs 2 to 3 weeks earlier. So you get this mismatch here between what the birds are doing and what the humans are doing. And that's kind of bad news for the poor old birds. So there are a number of these examples emerging where changes in seasonality are kind of upsetting the status quo, and it's leading to these mismatches between birds and animals and their environments, or indeed with humans.
Well, at least we're highlighting it for a start, and you can read that report. I'm sure we can put a link to the report, Thomas, on our website, if that's OK with you. It's rte.ie/mini. Thomas, thank you very much indeed. That's all we have time for today. My thanks to all the guys who worked on the programme, to Anna Leddy, to Jarlath, to Jamie on sound, our contributors, Amy Lana and Richard Collins. Until next week, goodbye.